Hey everybody, we're back with your Only Fans recap, and Nate Burnham is truly a great songwriter and human being, and I'm so glad we got to catch up. We start out by talking about my old truck and end up talking about religion and dogs and history and everything in between. We give well-deserved shout-outs to Jody Bartula of the Cody Johnson Band and James Hawk at Trinity Oaks, Guitars for Vets, for giving us an amazing songwriting retreat where Nate and I also got to meet veterans who are starting to write songs and heal through songwriting. We talk about the famous Wire Road Studios in Houston, Texas, where Nate recorded his first record that I sang on more than a decade ago. I love how he revisited that record by doing a mostly live version. Check out that and his whole catalog, especially I Got Game, if you're a hunter, and be on the lookout for Rodeo and Juliet, coming soon and co-written by Nate and my best friend, Sarah Hobbs. Also, we tried some new mics out on this episode, and it's not the greatest audio, but it's fine. Also, my great-grandfather George Lynn Hatch was the one who was captured by Pancho Villa. True story. Enjoy my chat with fellow history nerd Nate Burnham. Howdy, y'all. It's Bree Bagwell, and I know y'all support the people who support me, so let me tell you about Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Born and raised in Deep Ellum, Texas, Deep Ellum Brewing Company has really made its mark on the beer world. Known for its flagships, Dallas Blonde and Deep Ellum IPA, they put boring beers to shame with a full lineup that's unapologetically not brewed to style. My personal favorite is the Dallas Blonde. It is so easy to drink. I just took it home for the holidays and my whole family was like obsessed with this beer. No joke. They drank it all. Thanks a lot, family. So head over to deepellumbrewing.com to open the beer vault and give your fridge what it deserves. And you'll see why love runs deep for Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Available in Texas and Oklahoma, side effects may include severe happiness. Deep Ellum Brewing Company products are for individuals 21 and older, and we encourage drinking responsibly.
I took a semester of judo in college. Nobody knows this about me. And I can do the thing where I'm like, okay, grab my hand. And I'm like, oh no, I know how to get out of it if you grab me with the other hand. Then I'm like, yes, so if an attacker, if they come at me and they grab me with a specific hand on a certain side of my wrist, I can like get out of it. But that's about all I remember.
Hey, hey, everybody, this is Bree Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends in my van.
Okay, I need your opinion. We'll start the podcast on this opinion. Because you're a cool dude with cool things. Oh. The mechanic wants to lift it 4 inches. Is that going to make me look like a loser? Or is that going to be like, is that a good amount of lift?
That all depends on the tires. And then, I mean, the tires are going to cost, the wheels and the tires cost money.
I know. But I'm not going to go crazy on the tires. And I don't want, he said I could even keep my wheels with just bigger tires. Listen.
Are they going to like be outside of the...
No, we're not trying to go too crazy.
I wouldn't go too high if you're not going to go wide too.
I see. Okay, okay.
Like, if you know, it's like you can go wide and not get a lift because even the tires are going to raise you up a little bit. Like most people get like a leveling kit on one side, you know. You don't have to actually lift the suspension on the back. You can get like a 2-inch leveling kit on the front. It makes it look lifted and you get bigger tires. And that's what most people do, but like 4 inches is quite a bit. And if you do 4 inches and you have like skinny little tires, like
it's gonna look dumb.
I don't think it'll look as good.
Well, if I pull up in an old truck, but it's lifted with some cool tires, that still makes me cool, right?
What it says is, I just got my truck lifted and I don't have the money yet to buy new big tires, but I'm going to.
Oh, no. What if I have good tires, good lift?
Like, no, I mean,
because sometimes I pull up in this and people are like, Bree Bagwell drives a really old truck. I think it's cool that I drive an old truck. I got a big rig. That's what I'm trying to say. But I'm trying to make it to look like, you know, I don't want people to be like, oh, she's really scraping by.
No, well, who cares? Like, you get a good truck, you drive. I have a 97 Nissan pickup hard body. It's the last year of the hard body before they started making the Frontiers. And those are like the old Tacomas, like they're bulletproof. And I still have it. I keep it in Idaho because I still go back out there and hunt and stuff. So I have a vehicle to drive around. But it's old. But every time I turn the key, it starts. And, you know, my wife and I got married in 2008. And they had that whole, like, Obama cash for clunkers thing.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Okay.
And she's like, you should turn your truck in for cash for clunkers and get something else. And I was like, I think I want a divorce. You know, like, I don't... I don't think we should talk that way about this truck. Like, this truck has outlasted everybody, every girlfriend.
Yeah.
And apparently my first marriage too, because like I'm not getting rid of this truck and I still have it. And my daughter, she's 14. She wants to drive it, you know? And so I'm gonna have to get it down from Idaho. But you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, you got to work on them, but they're easy to work on. The older trucks are easy to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep that up, like they just run forever.
If anyone talks trash about my truck, I will murder them
just
too.
Punch them in the face.
I know. My dad gave me that truck.
Yeah.
My friend Nate Burnham is here. I'm so excited that you came here. Yeah. I was just talking about you a couple days ago because that songwriting retreat that we're on, I guess I had my venues crossed. That was the same one. But anyway,
how does that
I was
happen?
Talking about you because Sarah Hobbs, our mutual friend, is recording a song. And I asked her if that's one of the ones that you wrote at that retreat. So I don't know if we should tell the title, but we probably can, right?
Yeah.
It's the coolest title.
It is.
Was this your idea?
No. So the title's Rodeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who, they're regulars at this venue we would play. She doesn't play music. She doesn't sing. She doesn't write, really. She just messaged me one day. She's like, I have an idea for a song, which as songwriters, you know, everybody gives you lyrics. Here's some lyrics or here's an idea.
I got a song idea.
I think you would sound great if you sing, you know, and 99% of the time, nothing happens, but I always listen. Like, sure. Call her up. She's like, all right, I got the song. Title, it's Rodeo and Juliet. And I was like, all right, do you have any lyrics? She's like, no. Like, do you have like any melody that you want? No. It's like, do you know what you want the song to be about? No. Like, all right. I was like, all right. Like, I think it's interesting. You know, just give me some time. Might be next week, might be never, you know? And so I started researching women in rodeo. And I found this story about a woman named Bonnie McCarroll, who she was a bronc rider. Well, found out that women back in the day, they used to compete in rodeo all around events against men. They would bull ride, bronc ride, rope. They would do all the stuff the men would do.
Dang.
100 years ago.
How come I didn't know that?
I didn't know that. So like, I'm a bit of a history nerd. So I'm like, oh, well, this is cool. And of course, 100 years ago, there's people like, oh, women shouldn't be in rodeo. That's not a ladylike thing to do, right? But she was phenomenal. She was from Idaho, but she went all over the country doing exhibitions and stuff. But in 1929, it was going to be her last day. She was going to retire after that day. But she got hung up on a bronc named Black Cat. And she sustained injuries. And she basically, you know, she died in the arena. They rushed her to the hospital, but basically, like, she wasn't.
Oh, my God.
So after she passed away, all the pro rodeo circuits banned women from all the rough stock events. So essentially it was the day that the rough stock cowgirl died.
They didn't do that when Lane Frost died.
Right. And I tell this to people that everybody's heard the story of Lane Frost.
Right.
And nobody's heard the story
of
Bonnie McCarroll.
I was just going to say, like, exactly.
And I think that she should be a household name as much as Lane Frost. She's in the Cowgirl Hall of Fame in Fort Worth. She's in the Cowboy Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City. Like, people who know rodeo and know history, they know the name Bonnie McCarroll. And it's like this. So when I read this and I'm thinking Rodeo and Juliet, like if the actual Romeo and Juliet has some tragedy in it, like this is the story. Like, you have to tell this story about Bonnie McCarroll. So I started writing it on my own. I had like a verse and like half a chorus. And I really thought like, I need to bring a woman in on this, you know, like this like needs a woman's perspective. I knew of Sarah Hobbs, never met her before.
That was my next question. You guys had never met till that day?
No. So again, I showed up late to the thing. Like, I was there a couple days late. I got to write a song or two with some other people, but yeah, I was like waffling, like, do I talk to her about it? Do I approach her? I don't know. Like, we're just here to like at the same place, but I don't know her, you know? And, but I kind of wanted to talk to her about it. But last night, everybody was done writing and we're all sitting around that fire pit at night and everybody's just doing what they do, right? Joking, playing guitar, everything.
I had left already, I think. Did I leave that or was that?
I don't know if you were there on that one. Or maybe you were gone. I think you were gone. I think
like,
I came
left.
Late and you left like right away. And so, but this is the last night and she ends up, she's just by happenstance sits next to me and we're all hanging out and there's just kind of like a lull and I was like, hey, like, I've got this idea that, you know, I told the whole story and like, I've got this far, but like, I think this story, you know, would be cool to tell. And she was very like,
oh my God, Nate, yes. That is a great idea. I can't do it. Good job. But
pretty much.
It surprises me that you guys aren't better friends because you remind me a lot of each other. She's a hunter, gatherer, such as yourself. And she is super chill, really down to earth. So then you just wrote, isn't that wild? You just met her and then you just wrote a song and now she's recording it. I mean, I've been doing it 20 years and it still doesn't not shock me that that's how things happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it was just by chance. I was like, do you want to finish writing this with me? And she was like, yep. So we both got up, like went back in the lodge. We were there till like 2 a.m.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Like walked away like, oh, this was
special. Cool. Yeah, I have a special song with Sarah too. She's a special person. That's my best friend. So, do you like co-writing? Or I mean, I guess we should provide some context that our mutual friend Jody Bartula, who plays for the Cody Johnson Band, no big deal. He put together this songwriting retreat, and it was at, is it called Trinity Oaks? Oh, no.
It's Trinity Oaks.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Beautiful.
Also called the Thumbtack Ranch. Like, they have, like, a couple different names for it.
Like, beautiful lodge, cabins, and they put us all up. They brought in people to cook for us.
Yeah.
And then we just sat there and wrote songs, and it was delightful. So thank you, Jody Bartula, for choosing us.
And Hawk, thank you.
Hawk's
the one that...
Hawk is, yes, he takes care of everything. And they brought in some veterans there that were playing, starting to write songs, and... Man, I don't know what I was expecting, but a couple of them played their songs for us, and I was just a freaking puddle. It was so intense, and but also beautiful that they do that. And so I don't know. My question is co-writing for me. That's how I like to do it. Like, let's go to a lodge where there's beautiful scenery and a bunch of people. But other than that, like making myself co-write sometimes is tough. But that was really fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. How do you feel about it?
Well, Jody does a great job of getting the right personalities in there.
True.
And, I mean, he knows everybody on the planet, and he could invite everybody on the planet, but he tends to pick the right people to come in.
The cool people like us.
Right, yeah. Yeah, sorry. So if you didn't get the invite,
No,
I mean, you know, he meshes people really well. But, yeah, and then you don't have to worry about anything but getting enough sleep and getting up and writing again, which that's not a bad gig. And then... the scenery and everything else is the perfect conditions. And I, for me, songwriting was always just a personal thing. You know, I was writing songs before Avian was even playing music and open mic nights, and it was just for me. And then for a really long time, I just wrote by myself. And so when I moved to the Dallas area in 21 and started getting serious about music, is when I started getting exposed to these co-writes. And I was honestly pretty nervous. Like,
yeah.
Because like you have an idea, and the last thing you want to do is somebody to come in and screw it up.
I know.
It's your baby.
That's
the fear,
real
though.
Thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've had so many hooks gone wrong where you're like, oh, that wasn't, but that's okay. It's just, it's a real fear. It's not like you're scared of but you're scared of losing this thing that could be great. That doesn't even exist yet.
Yes.
Which is weird.
And so it's hard to trust somebody with that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I found overall, like, when I started doing it more, I'm like, oh, like, I'm not the only one that can write songs. Oh, like, there's people who have really great perspective on lines. And, oh, like, I don't have to do this alone. You know?
Yeah.
Like, so gradually you start to, like, give into the process and, like, you know, and I guess lose the fear of it all and everything. So
do you write mostly by yourself, though? Like, this stuff that... Because I write a lot by myself, and a lot of the stuff that my producer picks, she'll all send her... 20 songs and she'll choose 5, and she almost always picks songs that I've written by myself.
Yeah.
Which is wild, but I have written some of my favorite songs that I have ever written have been co-read, but I just feel like your songs are so specific that you maybe write most of them by yourself.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, most of them.
Yeah.
Like most, there's only like probably 3 songs that I put out that are co-writes, you know, and some of those were, I was halfway done, you know,
or
I needed a bridge,
yeah.
And I found somebody, I was like, this guy, you know, like listening to him and listening to his music, I'm like, I think he would, you know, so I came to them and was like, will you help me finish this, you know, and so I got to kind of pick some of those, you know, but you know, the whole thing with Sarah was really like, I mean, we finished that whole thing. Like, we really, the meat and potatoes of that song we did together. And so, I mean, it's really like a joint effort.
Oh, I love that.
And so it was, I kind of had a direction on it, you know, but, you know, she just came in and just added so much perspective and detail that I wouldn't have, you know. I mean, there's a line in the bridge that's like, she wore silver, but she always looked better in gold. And she's just like, oh, it's just a woman just wants to feel, you know, she just wants to feel so pretty. She's like, she's wearing silver that day.
Yeah,
but she looks better in gold, you know? And I'm just like, yeah.
You know, that's good to get a woman's perspective. You know, we work twice as hard for half the pay. No, I'm just kidding. And now we can't do rodeo stuff anymore.
Yeah,
that is fascinating. That I'm so glad that you told me that story.
Yeah.
Absolutely no idea. And we did talk about Jody Bartua already, but going back, I just want to say, because he played on your first record.
Right.
And I sang on that first record.
Did.
That was so long ago.
Yeah.
And talk about Wire Road being is such an incredible studio.
Oh my gosh.
That was your first record, right?
Yeah.
How'd you get so lucky to make your first record? I was like, because our paths, when I was researching you, we have kind of similar things, and our first records came out at this kind of almost the same time, and mine was recorded in a house in a bedroom. But you got to, that's an amazing first record. How did that come about?
First of all, like, I left the house and I kicked myself because I still have that album in CDs that are like shrink wrapped, and I was gonna bring one and sign it, write you a note, and give it to you.
Yeah.
And I was 2 miles from the house. I'm like, gosh dang it, I forgot it. So hold me to it. I will send it to you or whatever.
We'll see.
But
you again.
Like, because I figured this was going to come up. But yeah, so one of my friends in high school, his name is James Kelly. He's the one that started it. Like, he's the one that owns the studio. And he started just recording out of his house. And I had a buddy of mine that I was living in Austin, and I'd started playing like open mics and a few gigs in here, but I was doing I had another job. Like, I had other stuff I was really doing, focusing on, but I just, the opportunity to came up to record music with James, and one of my buddies, his name's Clay Cuvion, kind of was like, hey, James is doing this. Like, you should talk to him. So talked to him. I started going to Austin and recording songs just out of his house in the Heights as he was building the studio. And I had a traveling job where I was gone most of the summer, like 4 or 5 months at a time I'd be gone. So I'd kind of record a bit during the fall and the winter, and then I'd be gone. And so the project, I started kind of late, well, probably somewhere in 2011, but I didn't finish it all until like late 2012. And so in that time, Wire Road was being built. So I was kind of there when they breaking ground and wiring it, got to go in, see all the stuff. And then when it was finished, he needed like a kind of a test run.
Yeah.
You know? And
wow.
I mean, I've known him since high school. He was just, it was way cool. So it was kind of like a way for him to make sure everything works. And so some of it we recorded at his house. And then there's a lot of it that we just finished at the studio. The mixing, the mastering was at the studio. And yeah, Wire Road Studios is a phenomenal facility. And you go in there now and they've had producers with Platinum Records that have been working with Beyonce out of there.
Yeah.
They do a lot of TV stuff. I mean, every TV show that you've ever seen on Netflix has been on there. Stuff like, they've had Seinfeld come in. You know, obviously Pat Green. There's so many people who've gone through that studio since then, where I'm just like, wow, we actually got to
make a record there.
That was cool.
That is so cool. And then you did, I remember hearing you talk about wanting to do kind of a revisit live thing, but I love the title, Mostly Live.
Yes.
Because people always tell us, you guys should do a live record. You should do a live record. I was like, I hear my board tapes that we record and I'll listen back, and there'll be definitely some wrong notes, but there are times where you can hear my voice gurgle because I took a big drink of beer and had to burp or something, and I'm like, there is no way I could do a live record. And then I'm always saying something dumb or forgetting words but I thought that was such a clever title. That's so fun.
Well, the way it happened was we had everything set up to do it live, but something happened where we couldn't do the backup vocals at the same time. Like, Jody couldn't track. I don't know if we didn't have a channel. I don't know what it was, but it was like, it just happened that we're going to have to do the backup vocals later. And I was like, all right. So it went from being live to mostly live. I was like, well, it's mostly live, I guess. And I was like, you know what? I'm actually going to put that on the record. Like, this is going to be mostly live from Wire Road Studios.
I think that's so smart. Well, because when people do live records, someone was doing one the other day, and I was like, how much of that is really live anyway?
The musicians know, like, it's mostly live. And so I think definitely an inside joke. I don't think people that don't understand the recording process really understand the joke. But I get that a bit where people like
we have a lot of like artist listeners and musician listeners. So I think that they would appreciate that. That's awesome. Who played on that project?
I brought everybody in.
The same people from the first?
I brought in Walter Cross. I brought in Huff on the keys. I brought in Kenny Jackson Jr. on the guitar.
Wow.
I brought in, obviously Jody was there. We had Prusky do the bass. Because Jody did most of the bass on the other one.
Of course he did.
And then,
Joey Prusky is also from the Cody Johnson Band, if you don't know that.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And then I actually had Grace Partridge.
Yes, on fiddle.
She's incredible.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And she's so adorable. Yes. And she's so good. And then I didn't know she could also like sing too. She can do all the things.
Yeah.
Go look her up if you have not. Good shout out there. That's awesome. And Alan Huff. He played on a bunch of my records and plays in the Roger Craker Band. And then that's a dream team right there. Walter Cross also played drums on my first record. He's an incredible drummer. I think he just does studio stuff right now.
Mostly, I mean, he does every once in a while step out if the pay's right or whatever.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he was in
this
really good cover band that I sang with one time. That was the premiere cover band. If you have $1 million for a wedding, like, you hire this, and then they have a bunch of singers and and I bombed. That was not my gig.
Cover band.
I just wasn't. They wanted me to sing all of these like really rangy songs and you know, you have to sing them just like the record and in the key of I don't know. And I think Walter was the drummer, and I think I also, it was in my early days, I think I was a little bit hungover and I didn't do a great job. I never got hired back. That's okay.
This is off topic.
No, that was totally off. That was the definition of off topic.
But I was listening to the Kylie Fry thing on the way down.
Yeah.
I was listening to quite a few, actually. But she talked about the trio that you guys wanted to put together with Caitlin, herself, and you. And she's like, the name is like Outsiders. Did she ever remember what it was?
I don't know. And I thought about texting her because it came out the other day. Outskirts. That's so good. Because you weren't born.
That's just what hit me.
Do you want to be in our band?
No. But I just figured.
What do you mean,
like, no? I mean, listen, it's 2025. You need a guy in a skirt, you know? Like, I'll do it, you know?
Oh, I see.
But she was talking about how, like, you guys are, you know, from outside of Texas.
Yeah.
And you came into Texas. You feel like an outsider. So you're kind of like, she's like, we had a band name or something, but she couldn't remember what it was.
That's so good.
And I was like, I wonder if it's Outskirts.
I wonder if it's Outskirts.
So
I'll text her.
Yeah, see.
Because you...
And I don't know her, so I couldn't text her and ask
her.
She's
the best.
Yeah.
Did you see her at the TCMAs?
Mm.
How were the TCMAs? You just got...
No, it was great. Yeah. Grace was up for Fiddle Player of the Year. Didn't win. And then I had a bass player. Kerry Watson was up for Bass Player of the Year.
Cool.
Didn't win. And...
I didn't win.
You didn't? Okay.
No, I did not win.
The Nate Burnham Band is like 0-7, I think, right now on awards. You know,
What's super funny is that I have lost.
We're trying.
So many times that I've also won so many times. I'm old, so people congratulate me all the time at the awards. Like, congratulations tonight. I'm like, I didn't win, but that's so nice. But I almost never win those. I did win TCMA 1 year for a couple years. It's a great award show, of course, but. It didn't make sense logistically this year for me. I couldn't make it, but hated to miss it.
It's always great to just see people again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
See people you haven't seen in a while.
Catch up and run. Hey, you know, and I mean, that's the awards and everything are, you know, great. But it's like, it's the people, you know, and just finally get to be somewhere to hang out, because we never get to hang out.
We never get to hang out. And then I always end up partying way too hard. Mm. They're smart to have it on a Sunday where we don't have to do anything on Monday. But you still have to be a dad on Monday. You got how many babies? You got four babies.
Four babies.
Two boys, two girls. Yeah. How old are they now?
14, 12, 10, and 7.
You have a teenager?
Yeah, it's weird.
How's that going?
Well, she's the best.
Aww.
Like, she's the best. She's, you know, so it's great, but it's just... weird, because she's a ninth grader now.
Yeah, you know, it's like
we have a high schooler.
She's a lady now.
Yeah, but she's a daddy's girl. And
aww.
yesterday was like a crazy day and I was gone all day and I only had like a little bit of time to hang, like to see the kids before I had to go out and do some other stuff. And it was like 9 o'clock. She's supposed to go to bed, but I was like, I gotta go run this thing over here. It's like gonna take me about 30 minutes. You want to go? She's like, yep. Aww. You know, so she just jumps in the truck and a lot of times the time we get to hang out is just us driving around somewhere together and then we stop at 7-Eleven, get cookies and just hang out, you know? Aww. So it's like, but no, it's being a dad is it's the best thing in the world. Like it really is. And so fortunate and I, you know, fortunate to have a great wife at home.
Yeah.
That, you know, supports everything. And
we are lucky to have found our people, you know, like yeah. Everyone doesn't get that lucky. And I love watching being a dad. I was creeping on your Instagram and I was like, oh, they're in jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell. And if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/Bree Bagwell.
Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct-to-garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo-related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Brie and Whiskey sent you.
That's so smart. I took a semester of judo in college. Nobody knows this about me. And I can do the thing where I'm like, okay, grab my hand. And I'm like, oh, no, I know how to get out of it if you grab me with the other hand. Then I'm like, so if an attacker, if they come at me and they grab me with a specific hand on a certain side of my wrist, I can, like, get out of it. But that's about all I remember. But that's really smart. And I've thought so many times about just women in self-defense and guys, too, of course. But I think people don't think about it. It's like soccer or basketball or gymnastics. Right. But that's such a great skill to have. Any human.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you did that.
Well, and it's not, and I train a little bit. Like, I'm still a white belt, but mainly just because my kids are starting to beat up on me. I was like, I should start training a little bit. But, you know, it's not a silver bullet, but I've gone in against, and they call it rolling, like when you grapple or whatever, you practice. And so I've rolled against a woman who was smaller than me, weighed less than me, and she was a purple belt. And she didn't submit me, but she was a problem. Like, I couldn't do anything because she knew all the things to do. And so, you know, it, and then, you know, the Instagram post you might've seen is just my daughter going up against a taller boy and she ends up submitting him. It's like that kind of stuff. It's like, it, you know, you see the results of it and it's not going to save her from every situation in the world, obviously, but it is comforting to know, like, she's going to be a problem for somebody, you know, and she's still got a long way to go, but I think it's great. And the boys do it too. And they're great. It's just, I was like a baseball player growing up in college and everything else. And it's cool that they have their thing. You know what I mean? They have their own thing that they're doing. And so
until she gets hurt and then they ban all women from jiu-jitsu forever. Yes, I'm just kidding. That's not weird. Hopefully not going back. I'm going to be mad about that for like 14 days straight.
Did,
like,
they ban women from pro rodeo circuits?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I have family like that are going NFR and stuff. So that's just an interesting thing. Yeah. I did not know. But yes, I wanted to talk about that because that's when I was thinking about our parallel lives. Yeah. I was also an athlete. And you're an athlete, but college baseball, right? So that's, and you didn't pick up a guitar until college. I didn't pick up a guitar until college.
Okay, well,
So that's, it's kind of an interesting thing where, you know, that sports define you for so long. And there was a period where I hurt my shoulder and then I didn't end up going to college.
Play?
Volleyball.
Okay.
5A player of the year. It's not a big deal. Gatorade player of the year also, but it's just
Seriously?
Not a big deal.
Gatorade player of the year?
Well, I'm from New Mexico, so yeah, it's a little bit easier to get.
But Gatorade player of the year is a big deal.
Well, it was a big deal, but it's not. Wow. You know, I always say, you know, if you want to, we
Wait,
would.
So what schools were checking out Bree Bagwell?
Well, you know, also not to brag, but I got
did
a.
Did you do some visits?
I did a couple visits.
Yes.
But I didn't, the visit that I didn't do was University of Alaska Fairbanks sent me a recruiting letter, and it's like, do you like to cross-country ski to school? Do you want to go see grizzly bears on your break periods? And I was like, absolutely not. Like, I'm from the desert. Yeah. But everyone said, you should have gone and done that official visit. But I didn't. I didn't. I hurt my shoulder, and then I decided to go to college. I played actually on the club team, club volleyball team at UT, which was really competitive, actually.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
But every year we started playing Texas schools, and they would just, you know, put a whooping on us. So it's a little easier in New Mexico to be, you know, have some accolades. But I think I was good, but I would run the other way if I saw volleyball now. I mean, I'm glad you're still doing athletic things, it seems like. You have to because you hunt so much, right? Is that probably comes with the territory?
Well, yeah. No, I mean, fortunately, like, I still have legs. I feel like, I mean, I don't like work out like I used to. I'm full dad bod now at this point, but it's always one of those things like, I need to get back in, you know, and then I never do it.
Who has the time?
Yeah. You and Sarah on your podcast, like, what is gym? You know?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. I'm going to need an Apple Watch. I'm going to need. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. And then it's so funny because I just bought $200 worth of classes to my local cycle bar, and then they closed down without letting any of us know. So I was like, this is God telling me that I need to cool it. I don't need to be working out. Okay, but what position did you play in baseball?
Center field, lead off.
Wow.
Like, short, fast guy, I guess.
Yeah. You're not short.
I know. But, well, like, when you play, like, a Division I baseball team, like, I'm on the shorter end. You know, like,
I see, yeah.
Like, everybody was, like, 6'1", 6'2", and I'm over here at 5'10", like, I was like the second or third shortest guy on the team, which is like, I guess I'm average height.
Yeah. Maybe. Where'd you play in college? That's impressive.
University of Utah.
Oh, cool.
But I did junior college for 2 years at Mesa Community College in Arizona.
Okay. I knew you were in Arizona for a little bit. I love Arizona.
It's beautiful.
I'm obsessed with it. We just did a run out there, and I just had a meeting with my agent yesterday about 2026. He's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to go to Arizona.
Yeah.
But where is that college in Utah? What city?
Salt Lake.
It is Salt Lake?
Mm-hmm.
I like Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake's great.
I like Utah, too. We just went to Moab for the first time. Utah's a little bit underrated. It gets a bad rap.
Oh, yeah. Well, so what's the rap?
Hey, we don't talk about that.
We don't talk about politics or religion.
It's full of Mormons.
Yeah. Well, Utah, my mom was raised Mormon, so. The alcohol laws are a little bit of a bad rap. But I love Utah, and I love Arizona. I don't know. There's good and bad of all places, but how was living in Salt Lake City? Did you like it?
Yeah. So I was born in Utah.
Okay. And then
we moved when I was like 6 months old, but like moved to Arizona, dad went to Arizona State. Like, we moved around. I had five different elementary schools in five different states. Like, we bounced around, and then, I ended up in Texas in third grade. So, and then I, you know, basically lived there.
In Houston-ish.
In Houston, yeah.
Right.
And so, like, all my family's in Utah. But I have a lot in Arizona, too, and some in Idaho. Like, I joke about the Mormon stuff because I am Mormon.
Okay, so,
like,
I see. Okay.
I always joke about it, too. Like, I drive past our churches, and I'm like, there's those Mormons.
Oh.
And I'm just, it doesn't bother me.
You're currently still Mormon?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but...
Well, I was like, do you want beer, Diet Coke? I was just offering you all the crud we have.
Yeah, no, I get it. So, I mean, I grew up, like, in Texas. Like, all my friends were not LDS. Like, we're musicians. Like, we sell beer for a living, you know? Like, or we go to venues so people can drink and listen to music.
Right.
You know, there's some irony, I guess, with being a musician for me. But I don't advertise it. Most people don't know, you know, until, like... They notice that I haven't had a drink ever in their, you know, presence, I don't smoke, or I'm not partaking in any of the other fun activities, you know, like fun extracurricular.
I know what you mean.
You know.
But I think, you know, my mom talks about it a lot, about a lot of, you know, it's about taking care of your body, and it's about all of those ideals are really just about preserving your health. And now we're finding out all the stuff that's so terrible for us. As I'm drinking my fridge cigarette, my Diet Coke over here, which I've been trying to quit. This is my first one in a week. But I do love that idea, you know, like and that's honorable. And I really love that you do that, because being on the road is so hard. And if you cut out all the crap, it's probably got to be a lot easier than if you're really treating your body badly,
right,
and how you're such a big hunter. But that's then that's the original organic. Like, that's right. Not everyone's getting to, but it's like, that's, anyway.
Yeah. Well,
so, I admire that is my point.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. No, I rarely talk about it because I just for fun was like, well, what are the stereotypes? Because usually, like, I agree most of the time with, like, the bad rap stuff. Like, I'm easily self-deprecating when it comes to that sort of stuff. But
I was thinking more culty than Mormony.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not. It's fine.
Yeah. No, it's, trust me, like, I've heard it all, and nothing bothers me. Like, it's just one of those things where most people, they don't know it about me, but it's one of those things where, like, if they ask, like, yeah, I'll talk about it. But it's not, like, I've found that there's just great people everywhere you go, and, like, that's what matters. And there's bad people everywhere you go.
Yeah, that's right.
Even in my church, you know? And really, it's like, we live somewhere where we can afford everybody, like, the right to do and believe however they want. Like, obviously, like, being friends with Jody, you know, like...
Jody partakes,
right?
Absolutely.
But it's like, I have no problem hanging out with them. And right. No problem, you know, and I've been that way my whole life since high school. Just, like, some of my favorite people in the world, some of my closest friends are just completely opposite of me. Politically, morally... Right. Like, they're, you put it side by side, like, why are you two friends? It's like, because they're a beautiful person, they're intelligent, and I love them. You know,
I wish America could be like that.
Or mutual, yeah.
That's how it should be, really. Everyone's, that's what America is.
Right.
And it's become so ugly and mean and mad, and I just can't even. That's why we were like, no politics or religion on this podcast, because it's like, oh, no, we want everyone to just get along and, like, love each other, and I don't
Except
know.
Except for the Mormons.
Just
kidding, no.
No, that's so funny. Well, actually, you know what? I was trying to think of who it was, but...
I'm just kidding.
It's like my mom's great-great-great-grandfather. I can't even remember. I'm going to get this right for the recap, but was coming up from Mexico... And got captured by Pancho Villa. I know. So, and are we related?
I thought you got excited. Like, you love history and you come from a very historic area. So, like, I was hoping we'd get to some stories.
Okay, yeah. That is one. And then they moved to Mexico to practice polygamy. But then they were coming up, and then that's how they ended up in New Mexico, whatever. Anyway, fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
So, that's my mom's whole history. And she gave me a giant book.
So she has, like, pioneer.
Oh yeah.
So okay, I do too. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have a story?
Well,
Were your ancestors captured by Pancho Villa or just
no?
Okay.
But mine were in Nauvoo, like, and they crossed the plains. So, like, my great 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 grandfather died, in Nauvoo. So the mom sent two of the boys with one of the handcart companies, and her and the daughter stayed behind. And my grandpa, my great-great-grandfather was like 10 years old, and he walked across the plains.
That's insane.
Yeah. And his job was to tend the cattle with his 12-year-old brother. And they couldn't swim. So, like, when they would cross rivers, he would hold onto a cow tail, and it would swim across. I mean, and they walked the whole way from there to the plain, to Salt Lake. And I mean, it's like there's whole crazy stuff. Like, I mean, I could talk for another hour on just those stories, but just cool stuff like that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know,
can you imagine?
No.
Being 10 and just being like, well, get across that river. You're like, I'm not holding on to
the cow.
And even just now, I can't even walk barefoot. I was trying to walk barefoot across my nicely graveled thing, and I was like, ow, nope, can't
try
do
Nebraska.
It.
Nebraska. Yeah. You know? Try Wyoming.
Or you.
Yeah.
Exactly. You don't know where and how are they navigating and how, I mean, the whole, I was just in the Dakotas. We just did North Dakota, South Dakota. And I was reading, you know, listening to a Crazy Horse, The Killing of Crazy Horse by Bill O'Reilly. Cause I like love those books and how
history.
Anybody survived
and
got us to where we are today. So we could go play music and sell beer and be idiots. That's why. We're trying to do some things here, like document our friends, promote our friends, because what else are we doing? We're not crossing the plains.
No, we're not.
And holding on to a bull's tail. Anyway, that is fascinating.
Yeah.
We've already, like, flown by, so I just want to, we should talk about, I don't know when this is going to be out. Is this going to be out soon? January? Because you're going to play Rhinestone Saloon coming up, but this will already be out.
December 4th.
What's your plan for next year, and what's your 2026 looking like?
That song with Sarah Hobbs should be like finally coming out.
Cool.
You know, she had the idea of, I guess I should just finish a sentence.
No. Oh my gosh. I'm famous. Oh, I just did it again. Three times in a row. Sometimes I'm listening to myself talk. I'm like, girl, you got to get to the end of the sentence.
Right.
But you're doing way better than me.
Okay, so
or I'm rubbing off on you.
Is that what it,
yeah. Sorry.
I've recorded it with Jody already and I've been kind of waiting for her to do her backup vocals. And then she had the idea that she wants to cut it and then maybe have me do the backup vocals and we release it at the same time.
Okay. That's awesome.
And I'm like, that is awesome. So hopefully next year we actually have that done and we're promoting it and putting it out. Like that's kind of the next thing I hope. I've got a song called Bird Dogs Fly that's about one of my hunt dogs that passed away that should be coming out.
Oh no.
Oh yeah. But it's a happy song. So it's not what you think.
So is mine and I still cry.
Yeah, it's rough.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
I can't. Yeah. And your songwriting, it's so crazy. We didn't even really like touch on it, but the I've Got Game song is like perfectly written.
Thank you.
I'm gonna make myself cringe when I say this, but that song should be on every TikTok. Like that should be a huge song for
Hunters.
If you have and their videos. And I have some hunter friends I'm gonna send it to.
Please do.
Not that you know that'll make us $1 million, but everything helps. But that is so
well
written. Did you write that by yourself?
Yeah.
It's really good.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, so Bird Dogs Fly.
You're
just doing some singles and stuff? Like,
I have all these Western songs that I've written that, you know, stories and ballads that it's like never had a home.
Yeah.
And I wrote a song called 1845 that came out.
Oh, yeah. Because Steamboat was a part of part of Texas. And we did that in our ads, in our Steamboat Music Fest ads.
Yeah.
Like, did you know in 1845,
yes,
Steamboat was a part of Texas? And I didn't know that. And you put it in a song, which I thought was so smart when you think about song ideas and where they come from, and I would have never thought to make the fact that Colorado is part of Texas into a song.
So, right.
Great job. I interrupted you.
No, thank you. That's what we do. We talk. And then, but I have a lot of Western songs. I guess the short of it is, because I know we're out of time, but some people at the King Ranch found me through that song. And because they're like, we love history and everything. And they had me come play their corporate event or their Christmas party in Houston. And then they loved us and they invited us out to San Antonio to do their cattle convention. And they're like, we want to keep working with you. We have this thing out in at the King Ranch. We want to bring you out. We do like a fundraiser.
No big deal.
Yeah. And that they're like, it's in June. I was like, cool. Yeah. Let me know. And so, you know, April, May, June come and go. July, I never hear from them. And then August, they're like, hey, sorry. We ended up spending our budget on somebody else. You know, they usually have like a lot of artists come down, but we just had one, just some guy named George Strait.
I knew it.
And I was like, so you're saying
he'll take the budget.
I got fired for George Strait. She's like, yeah. And I was like, that's freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like I got fired for George Strait.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody,
yeah.
Hey, babe, guys, I got fired for George Strait.
I was the second choice.
Oh, yeah?
Like, that's a big, no, you.
Oh yeah. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you're going to be there too.
I moved you to third.
Right. Hey, I take that too.
Not to bust your bubble.
But I was like, the story of getting fired for George Strait is even right. Better than actually getting to play. Like, I still want to play the King Ranch, but like, that's even better. So it was a gift. But no, all this, like I have these Western stories and songs that because of 1845, like I'm finally going to put them out in like a small collection called 1845.
Very cool.
And it's going to have stories about Texas and Arizona and
awesome.
The West. And I, you know, I wanted to talk to you so much about the West. We never got to it.
I know. Well, we'll have to have a part two.
Time. Okay.
But maybe you can write a song about my great, great, great grandfather
maybe
getting captured by Pancho Villa. That's right. No, that's exactly right. Well, you're just so good at it. And then I was just going to make you do it and then jump on it last minute.
Deal.
No, we should definitely do that together.
No, I'd love that stuff.
Okay.
Like, Jody and I are kind of on this kick. Like, just spaghetti Western sounding. Just
totally.
Storytelling.
I have a song about Billy the Kid coming out next year. That's, you know, spaghetti Western ooze at the beginning.
Grave.
And what? Is he really in there, though?
I don't know.
I mean, I think so, but We're going to have to do a part two. Or maybe next time you come down, we can just actually try to write a song, and then we can just talk about how much we love the West.
Yeah.
And you're just such a good songwriter, and your band is so good, and you're such a great singer, and you're a great person and a great dad, and I'm glad we finally made this work, and thanks for coming down.
Thank you for having me. Like, I've from Wire Road till now, like, I've got to watch you build this career and become this household name, and it's been so cool to watch that. You know, like a lot of friends back then, just building careers. You know, obviously you and Jody have done pretty well for yourself.
Well, you had to take a minute to start a company.
Yeah,
and that was so smart, though. I mean, Paul and I talk about that all the time. If we just took a couple years off to like build a company, because it's like if you show up on time and you do a great job and you build it, then you can sell it and then you can chase your dreams. And that's like you did that so perfectly that we're a little bit jealous of you. We mostly love you, but then we're a tiny bit jealous. But then now you get to come back with peace of mind and kind of just do it. At least that's what it seems, instead of like, you know,
well, a couple years turns into like 7, 8, or 9.
Well, right.
But yeah,
no, that's
it's
right.
And it's, and then twice as longer and twice as harder than you think.
Not saying it was easy to do that for sure, but it is. You know, we think about it all the time, and it would just be really nice to not have to have a double musician income household that is could come and go at any minute. It's insanity.
Right.
But people should check out your website. You have great merch. I got some today. Yeah. I love this logo. This is like the coolest logo. That's
Thank
a great
you.
Job. And check out your band and all your stuff, and I appreciate it. And sorry I made you talk religion on here.
No,
it's great.
I love it. No, it does not bother me at all.
Edit it out. No, don't edit it out. Okay, good. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.